Welkom bij Bart's Artist Talk, een podcast over kunst met Galerie Bart. De galerie aan de Amsterdamse Elandsgracht is 7 keer per jaar gedurende 6 weken een huis voor kunst, kunstenaars en kunstliefhebbers. Je treft de kunstenaars die naast hun serieuze kant ook speels, luchtig en humoristisch zijn. Ze vervagen de grenzen van hun disciplines, werken conceptueel en hebben oog voor beeld in de lege ruimte. Naast dat de galerie kunstvormen als fotografie, sculpturen, installaties, tekeningen en schilderijen exposeert, is het ook een plek waar de maker soms resideert. Dan is daarmee ook een vertrekpunt voor nieuw werk. Zo was het ook het geval voor de oorspronkelijk uit de UK afkomstige Lawrence James Bailey. Deze zomer resideerde hij in Galerie Bart en werkte hier letterlijk dag en nacht aan zijn solo-expositie. De Unofficial Bastard Countryside Tour. De expositie bestond uit 10 rapportages van rondreizen die hij op de fiets door Amsterdam had gemaakt. De routes werden aangeduid op 10 dezelfde op het groen van de stad Amsterdam gefocuste plattegronden. Niet geheel ontoevallig, want Lawrence gaf, voordat hij de residentie startte, aan op zoek te willen gaan naar de wildernis in de urban omgeving. De kleinste ronde dwars door het centrum zal nog geen 5 kilometer zijn geweest, de buitenste 95. Deze expedities legde hij vast door middel van het zelfgemaakte foto's, tekeningen, collages, t-shirts, wandkleden, vlaggen en zelfs een stoel. Deze eerste aflevering van Bart's Artist Talk nemen we op vlak na de closing party van Lawrence zijn expo. Ik, Geert, podcastmaker, amateur, kunstbekijker en fan van de galerie, was er zelf ook op deze closing party en ik liep als laatste de deur uit. Achter mij deed in Amsterdam woonachtige Lawrence zelf de deur op slot, alsof het zijn eigen huis betrof. Van achter het glas zwaaide hij mij, zijn laatste gast, nog even uit.
See you later.
Ik ben erg benieuwd naar deze man, met een ongelofelijk arbeidsethos en een brede set aan skills. Ik vraag hem naar zijn ideeën achter de expositie en zijn ervaringen deze zomer. Ook Christa Jongsma, gallery director van Bart, schuift aan voor wat insights. En is zelf, nu de expositie eenmaal is opgedoekt, ook nog wel benieuwd naar een aantal zaken. Niet schrikken, het gesprek is in het Engels. So, hello everybody, welcome Lawrence and welcome Christa. Lawrence, to start off, can you tell us something about yourself?
Yes, I'm a visual artist working and living currently in Amsterdam. I was born in the UK, where I studied, and I moved here to do a postgraduate course at De Ateliers. And then after finishing there, I fancied my chances on hanging around and staying here. So since then, I've been living and working here.
And Christa, can you tell us who you are? You work for Galerie Bart. What is it that you do?
I'm currently working as a gallery director at Galerie Bart, and I'm mainly occupied with the organizational aspects around exhibitions in the gallery.
And why is Lawrence this a great match with Galerie Bart?
Lawrence presents quite a fresh view of the world, makes us look at it in a very new way that I also noticed myself. Walking through the countryside, suddenly all these scenes started popping up in my awareness that I'd never noticed before. Galerie Bart likes to select work that is often very playful, very full of humor, and that's very present in Lawrence's work. And I think even most important in the gallery selection is that the work is based on highly developed craftsmanship, and no matter the medium that he uses, that is the case.
So Lawrence, he used the space, the empty Galerie Bart space to create its own projects. Let's have a listen. Kunst aan de muur. Muren die overigens worden gedeeld met de etelsdroogisterij op links. Een Turks restaurant Divan op rechts. Aan de overkant zitten Gal en Gal en daartussenin, in het verkeersluwe gedeelte, zit een speelplaatsje. Het pand is, net zoals zoveel panden uit die tijd, een lange smalle pijp. Ongeveer 5,5 meter breed en 26 meter lang. Halverwege zit een lichtkoepel. Iets verder een rietveldachtig houten trappenhuis, wat leidt naar een lichtkantoor. Op het kantoor hangt een selectie aan werken van vele ex-exposanten. Terug naar beneden. Aan het eind van het pand twee deuren. Met daarachter een zonnige nette tuin met horizontaal gras en verticaal met klimop begroeide tuinafscheidingen. Er is buiten kunst, een bankje en een schuurtje. So Lawrence, how is it for you to have this echoing space called Gallery Bart?
Yeah, it was kind of a blank canvas. I moved in with four small boxes of materials and tools, and I'd been kindly donated six maps of the city, which rather than showing streets and buildings, they show the open spaces of the city, like parks and lakes and stuff. So the first thing I did was unpack my boxes, create a little desk station for myself, and then I put the maps on the walls. And then I sat back and I looked at this big space full of maps on the walls and thought, like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I thought I had a clear idea that I was going to show photos and maps. But when you're actually in the space and it comes to physically making it, it's like, yeah, where do I start? At the moment, I just have a map exhibition and the maps aren't even made by myself. They're like somebody else's. Yeah, but then eventually I went out and about around the city taking photographs. I'd come back with the photographs, print them out, stick them on the walls. In between them, I started to put drawings and notes. And then eventually the exhibition started to take form, take a shape. So it started off quite daunting in this big space with what I thought were clear ideas. But then soon, you know, I realized they weren't precisely clear, but then eventually by working, by seeing things, that's when the ideas start to become more concrete, and that's what I ended up with.
And Krista, how was this for you?
That was quite different than we had expected, actually. Lawrence had told us about these tours, but it's more the concept and the working process, and I didn't have the faintest idea what that would result into visually as an exhibition, like tours and t-shirts.
Same
I
here.
Don't know.
I was the same, like, this is what I want to do. I thought I was quite clear. It's like, yeah, I'm going to make an exhibition of maps and photos. But then when I'm actually in the space, I'm like, yeah, but how? And I have like a few weeks to do it now.
All this work happened with an explosion of fabrics and threads and pins and pictures all over the place and a reveling sewing machine day and night. We may have underestimated that last bit. And suddenly the ground floor of the gallery was inhabited by you. It was your domain, which you expanded out into the garden, which is also very nice. It sort of became part of the gallery. And you used to want to clean up very neatly before the gallery would open to the public. But I guess that is precisely what the people were fascinated by, having a peek into your studio, your process, the art being created. And what was very lovely was that this exhibition was a moving thing, was sort of a living thing. We're constantly not only adding new works every week or every couple of days, but changing around the works in new combinations, looking for the best way to show them together. And it was a continuous, exciting surprise for us to see every morning what you had created and changed during the night.
So we actually asked Lawrence to record some of the sewing machine, and well, yeah, it is really loud. So Lawrence, these rounds, these trips through Amsterdam that you made, I heard you did it on bike.
Well, I know that some people who come to the Netherlands from the UK have never rode a bike before. I mean, well, cycling in the UK is more of a hobby than a serious means of transport. And if you saw the hills around Stoke, where I came from, or around the Peak District, you'll know why people don't cycle to work every day. I had my first proper bike when I was like, I don't know, maybe 7 or 8 years old. And getting me to ride on two wheels instead of four or three was a nightmare to begin with. And I think I had a few bad falls. I remember, a few times my dad had to come out of the house and pick me up off the street and carry me home because I was half unconscious. But I'm okay now. And I'm also a better cyclist now.
Oh, yeah. And what kind of bike do you ride currently?
It's some kind of vintage beach cruiser thing. Some of the old rattly thing, although I say old, but I think it's more new spare parts now than old bike, but it gets me by.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the exhibition. You did 10 tours on Amsterdam, like from small to big, and you use this bike to go on tour. Can you tell me a little bit more about these tours?
I wanted to create a work where I was looking at parts of the city where nature and urbanism collides. So I created 10 journeys around the city, which I could follow. And each route would take me through different areas and look at different aspects of the city.
How long was the biggest round?
The biggest one, I think it was like about 95 kilometers or something like that. It was a tour of the, a journey around the border of the city. So I started over in the Westerport at the African Haven, and then I went over into the edge of Zaandam, then all the way around to the north, over to Zeeburg and Eiburg, and then from there I went down to the Zuidoost, across the south of the city, back to the Westerport.
And that took you one day?
No, I did that in 2 days. All my other journeys, my other routes, I did in one day, but that was the only one I had to do in 2 days because it was just too far. The previous one before that was about 60 kilometers, and I did that in one day, but that almost killed me because we had a few hot days during this summer, so I was doing it all in the one day, as well as stopping, taking the photographs, cycling more, checking the maps, constantly making sure I'm on route.
You actually got some rain, right?
The very last one, I spent maybe about 60 minutes under a bridge near Zaandam waiting for the rain to go. It would have taken me about an hour to get there. And I thought, well, I can either go back home and then do it another day, in which case I've wasted that day and I was going to set me back, even delay me even further by extending it to another day. Or I could just continue in the rain and just see what happens. And luckily, I decided to continue and see what happens because maybe 2 hours later, the rain stopped. And by the time I got home, the rain would have stopped and I would have been home. And I would have found out I could have done it. So perseverance. I persevered and I continued in the rain, and I'm glad I did. Because that day I have some nice clouds as well, some like typical Dutch skies with the low clouds over in the north of Amsterdam there, the flat ground and the low sky. And that was nice. Rather than the tropical blue sunshine that I have in all my other photos.
that's not Dutch at all.
It's not typical Dutch now. Looks Photoshop.
So, but about these photos, you took about 500 of them. Is that true?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I took more than 500. I took nearly 2,000, and all my memory sticks and my computer was full. But no, I printed out 500 and put them in the space.
What's your most photographed object or subject?
I made a lot of photos of weeds growing between the cracks of the city. And probably the thing I always like to photograph are stinging nettles. They take the leading role in a lot of my pictures. They're my favorite plant. I love their proportions and their teeth, like teeth-shaped leaves. They're apparently quite nutritious. And and they're high in vitamin C and protein, apparently, if you cook them. And I think that's why they have this sting to them. I think it's to stop you from to stop anybody from taking advantage of them, eating them. So they fight back. So they're a plant that's got a bit of an attitude. And all in all, they're my favorite plant. So lots of photographs of nettles, I think. But I'm not really a botanist or anything, with all these photographs of leaves. And I don't really pretend to. What I'm more interested in when I'm photographing plants is the circumstances which allows the plants and wildernesses to grow undisturbed within the city. So I'm really looking at the process, and the plants are a product of that process. So I'm more interested in what weeds represent rather than the weeds themselves.
And in addition to all these pictures, you create, of course, a lot of artworks. monotypes, various textile works, to sculptures. You're so multidisciplinary. How did that happen? I mean, you started out as a sculptor, I've heard, and that was not enough for you? You want to expand?
When I studied my bachelor in the UK in fine art, I was in the painting department because I always thought I wanted to be a painter. All my favorite artists were painters, but my paintings always turned three-dimensional and became objects. And some members of the sculpture department would come over sometimes to the painting studios and say like, oh, you have to be over in our department. But I didn't want to. I liked the painting studios. They were nice and light. You had a little desk in your own little corner. And the sculpture department was always people in overalls banging bits of metal. Like this was the mid-90s when like Anthony Gormley and these kind of big metal sculptures were around. And I wasn't the kind of sculptor who, you know, welded or stuff like that. I sat at a desk and I made small things. And yeah, as I said, this was the mid-90s. So the whole art scene was kind of changing a little bit more. Tutors in the painting department were like, no, you can be a painter and you can make things. It's perfectly okay. They justified why I should stay in the painting department. So yeah, I was always a painter who made objects. But then since then, I've always been sort of battling between the two dimensions and the three dimensions. I like an image on a surface, but I also like the fact that this image can also be an object. That's why maybe why I make things like t-shirts or banners or flags, because they are a three-dimensional object with a picture on it. And sometimes I like it when the skin or the image on it somehow contrasts with the form that's on it. You know, I like to play with object and image.
And you even made a chair.
Yeah, chair is interesting because a chair is an object. Of course, it's a three-dimensional object, but as soon as you start...
And you can sit on it.
You could try. As soon as you, then you can know it's also got a surface on it. It's also got a back and a seat that can have images on them. You know, chairs can have patterns or pictures. And once I started to make flags and banners, I thought, what other objects can have sort of embroidered or pictured things on? And the chair was good because, you know, chairs, it's a very functional thing. And it wasn't like a couch or anything. It was a camping chair, which makes you think about a certain situation or a certain place. So the type of chair in combination with the images that are on it, a bit like theatre in one way. I mean, talking about your artwork in terms of theatre is a bit of a dirty word. But like a theatrical prop, it can transport the viewer to a different time or place.
So I was wondering, the name, the unofficial boss at Countryside Tour, it sounds badass. Can you tell me about why you chose that name?
Mainly because I'm badass. But also, the title came from a quote by French author Victor Hugo from his book Les Miserables. But I first saw the phrase "bastard countryside" when it was in the chapter title in a book by a nature writer called Robert McFarlane. He'd use it as a chapter title in his book called Landmarks. I thought it was a great name for describing these spaces between the city and the countryside, these kind of unwanted and unrecognized mixed spaces. But then I found a photographer had also used the same name for one of his books, and that was a little bit annoying. But when I thought about it, I still liked the idea, and I just used it anyway. So I changed my title a little bit, and... my title became the unofficial Bastard Countryside Tour, and I used the word unofficial in recognition of its own sort of illegitimacy. But I have the quote here, actually, if you want to hear it. This is
yes, please,
a quote from Les Miserables. To wander in a kind of reverie, to take a stroll, as they call it, is a good way for a philosopher to spend his time, particularly in that kind of bastard countryside, somewhat ugly but bizarre, made up of two different natures which surround certain great cities. And there he's talking about the outskirts of Paris from 200 years ago. And then, yeah, it's still quite relevant to the outskirts of most cities today, I guess.
And I think there is this sense of improvisation and constant development in your work, as if things are often in the middle of some kind of change or adaptation. Even your own intertext has been edited by you, by pen, scratching out words, adding others, sort of left imperfect. That was a very fun detail to a lot of people.
Yeah, right. I wanted, because the gallery had its own intro text, of course, and its own thing, but I also wanted my own personal little text, just so I didn't have to be there to also or always explain things in my own words. So I thought I'll just write a little text, put it on the wall. It could be part of the exhibition. It's not like the gallery information that sits on the table. This is part of the part of my notes. It can sit between my photos and my objects. So I wrote this text, and of course you write it down and you print it because you think it's fine, and then you read it the next day and you think like, oh, there's so many mistakes in this. So you cross the mistakes out, rewrite things. And my intention was always to retype it and then, you know, put it back on the wall nicely typed out. But I kept it on the wall with all its crossings out, mainly as a space holder to tell myself, don't stick anything else on the wall there because that's where this thing is going to go. And then as time started to run out before the opening, I had lots of things to do before people were let in to see what I've been doing. And I was kept putting it off of retyping this thing. It wasn't urgent. It had to be done. So I just put it off. But in that time, people were also telling me that like, oh, it's kind of fun, this kind of like text that you've scribbled bits out. And so, yeah. So being as I was running out of time, and also because the exhibition was about this constantly evolving, changing thing, I thought like, okay, yeah, it actually doesn't need to be cleaned up for the opening. So it just stayed the way it was. I mean, it's readable, but it's just not written in 12-point Helvetica like most things are. It's my scrawly handwriting.
You have a lot of pictures in an exhibition. And I was wondering, were there any pictures that reminds you, especially on your childhood back home?
I was a child in the 80s in part of the UK, which was beginning to suffer the effects of post-industrial change. Whole industries in Stoke-on-Trent started to close, and leaving behind abandoned factories and lots of waste ground. It's mostly been tidied up. But here and there, there's still relics of this. And also in the smooth and polished Amsterdam, sometimes I see an abandoned piece of ground, which is home to some kind of modern ruin and weeds. And this stirs some kind of DNA. This is like stirs something in my DNA. So there's photos in this exhibition, mainly taken on the edge of the city, which take me back to growing up, I think, and playing in these waste grounds.
I've noticed that some of the visitors have some difficulty actually with part of your topic. Like they're quite at ease with seeing nature entering all over the city. But looking at the human traces left in the natural environments in the outskirts of the city, they would only see this through the lens of pollution. And as I heard, even how does he do this? Working with his focus on all this trash, it would make me so sad. Knowing you, I don't think that's the case at all. And with that work, you may even be shifting the way people look at things that they have deemed ugly or untidy or waste. Is this something you are purposefully playing with, or are you yourself just feeling much more comfortable and objective with the human traces everywhere in nature?
I think you were spot on when you said it was more about objectively looking at human traces. Of course, I look at it as litter or pollution, and it's not useful to have all these things lying around. But when I look at them, I'm more looking at investigating what's gone on and what people are doing, and from that you can work out what these places are used for. And yeah, that's really what I'm interested in.
So for this show, you recorded some audio recordings where you explain in words what you look at and what you see. Let's have a listen to that.
So I followed the highway a little further west, and it brought me to another underpass. This one, quite a unique one. Above me, the highway divides into smaller lanes because there's a junction nearby. But where the lanes divide, that's a lot of light come through. And that allows like this lush vegetation to grow, mainly ivy, but there's also some ferns there, some grasses, nettles I see. It looks very picturesque, like something from a 18th century romantic painting
of a ruin. There's big boulders, big stones on the ground. Not quite sure if they're there to stop people from parking their cars or to beautify the space, or maybe a bit of both. But the stones also provide what looks like a nice sitting area for people who like to drink white beer from a low-budget supermarket nearby. I recognize that brand. There's also cigarettes, some apple juice. Nice to be healthy. Face mask. It's a fresh smell then. But yeah, this is probably the most idyllic underpass I've ever seen. Lovely. I would break out into poetry, but I don't do poetry.
The artworks that you've made are displayed in the exhibition around space as if they were souvenirs taken on these tours. Could you tell us about, for instance, the embroidered t-shirts that you have made?
Like I said earlier, I'm interested in image and in objects and bringing them both together. And for this particular project, I thought it would be appropriate not just to have pictures, but to make objects which belong to the story that I'm presenting amongst the photos. So in the past, I've made these things that look like banners, banners that hang in a church or a clubhouse. But for this project, I wanted something more domestic, you could say, something more day-to-day. So that's why I started creating imagery applied to t-shirts, which then became, like you said, souvenirs or merchandise for, as part of a tour or a journey.
And what is your favorite work that you made?
There was, for this exhibition, there was one which I made quite late in the project, and it was quite a simple one. It was an embroidery which I'd bought from a secondhand shop. And it was some fox hunters in sort of a romantic country scene. And I embroidered over all the fox hunters and their horses and their dogs and put like a ruined structure over the top of them. So the image then became an idyllic, countryside scene with a ruin in it. And I thought, yeah, that was nice. And then around that, I added this red and blue barrier tape, you know, the warning tape. I added something that looked like that to it. And it was kind of a very simple piece. It was not necessarily too labor intensive, which some of my works get. And straight away, it told a story, a sort of a contrast between romanticized views of the countryside and something more weird in the countryside. And I like the piece of work because it's also a template for things I'm currently working on as well.
Could you let us in on the process of making your textile works? I've seen a little bit of it over the summer. We were, for instance, surprised to see you are embroidering using a normal sewing machine.
I've never been tutored in how to sew. I started sewing because I was doing drawings and I wanted something that wasn't paper. So I bought myself for quite a basic sewing machine, and that's what I began using, not thinking it was going to be something I'd be doing for the next 2 years. I've just kind of stuck with that now. And I've stripped kind of a few pieces off the machine. So all it is now is a needle with a piece of cotton which penetrates the fabric underneath. And yeah, I use it like you'd use a pencil. So yeah, it is a kind of a basic sewing equipment, but it's all I need to do the pictures, or like I'm drawing in the fabric with a needle, and then the machine, all the machine is doing is making the rattling noise you were talking about earlier, da 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 da, and yeah, I move the fabric around instead of moving the needle around, and yeah, it's a very simple process, I think, and it's so simple I don't really need any more of a bigger, more technological machine, I don't think.
So, Lawrence, you'll be participating in the big art exhibition at Hamburg Zaandam. What is it that you are making?
It's kind of linked to this exhibition in a way. In some ways, it's a accumulation of a lot of the things I've been looking at during this past exhibition. It makes reference to these no man's lands, which appear in, and specifically, I'm looking at these no man's lands that flank either side of highways, for instance, like Amsterdam's A10 Ring Road.
So a lot of A10 in your work over there.
It will be, yes. It's a lot of. It's a lot of views of the A10,
yeah.
Made in textiles.
Beautiful. we can also, you also recorded some shots, some bits and pieces of the A10. So we're going to listen to it right now. Beautiful nature sounds of cars driving over a highway at about 100 kilometers an hour or less.
And a train.
And a train. And a metro as well. All right, Lawrence, thanks for your time and for your awesome exhibition here.
Yeah, thanks for having me back to talk about this.
Bedankt voor het luisteren naar deze eerste aflevering van Bart's Artist Talk. Check de site voor het aanbod of loop gewoon even een keer langs bij deze gezellige club.